Think advertising on TikTok isn't for your business? Think again.
With TikTok ads, we went from 250,000 downloads to over 1 million downloads in less than a year.
I'm Eve.
I'm Anam, and we're the co-founders of Alinea.
Alinea Invest is an investing app for Gen Z.
We run 50 new ads per week with 3 variations thanks to TikTok Smart Plus campaigns. If you're not advertising on TikTok, you're missing out.
Drive more app downloads only on TikTok. Head over to getstarted.tiktok.com/TikTok ads.
At Pluralsight, we don't just teach skills. We are building the tech workforce who deliver results fast, accelerated by top-tier content. Lead with confidence. Lead with expertise. Visit us at Pluralsight.com to tap in and learn more. At Pluralsight, we don't just teach skills. We are building the tech workforce who deliver results fast, accelerated by top-tier content. Lead with confidence. Lead with expertise. Visit us at Pluralsight.com to tap in and learn more.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Today on The Grave Talks, we continue our conversation about urban legends, ghost stories, and folklore, a new book by Micah Campbell. We've all heard those stories that seem to be passed down. Maybe it's a vanishing hitchhiker, a ghost everyone knows that haunts a cemetery nearby. Maybe it's something more nefarious, like a monster that people have reportedly seen in a nearby forest or swamp. We've all shared those stories, but do we really know the truth? Do we really know what goes bump in the night? Do we really want to? What is the truth behind those spooky legends? I'm Carol Hughes, and on this episode of The Grave Talks, we'll continue our conversation about urban legends, ghost stories, and folklore, a new book from author Micah Campbell. Now, Micah, what is one of the stories that you particularly felt drawn to or one that really moved you as you were researching the book?
You know, there's one, I think it's the second to last chapter, Hell's Gates Bridge. That one brought me to tears by the end of it. That one is so tragic, and it takes so many twists and turns. So the story is on Hell's Gate Bridge that if you drive directly to the middle, it doesn't matter which way you're driving, but if you drive directly to the middle and look out your back window, you'll see a shimmer or a sometimes a fiery landscape, but then it's gone. You know, you keep driving and it's gone. But if you go right to the center of that on either side, you'll see that. And this one took a lot of investigating, but there were two deaths that happened right around the same time. First, a little child was killed by a woman who was poisoning her son and husband, but she practiced on neighborhood kids to get the poison right. And one of the girls actually died, and her spirit was trapped on that bridge. Okay, so that's part one of the story. And part two is a firefighter was heading down that road to a fire that was arson. And so when he got there, he died. And he's in a lot of the fire department's memorials, and stone etchings have his name and other things for his bravery and things like that. One of the fire stations is actually named after him down there. But the bottom line from these two stories is they converge. And I won't say how, but they converge. And the reason Hell's Gate Bridge exists and the reason you see those fires on both sides is that the girl doesn't know she's dead or why she died. She's trapped there. And the fireman, because of his heroic actions, will not leave her. So they're both trapped there. Her, because she'll always be trapped there because she doesn't know she's dead. And he'll always be trapped there because he won't leave her. And so it's insanely gut-wrenching at the end. I mean, it is like, I was crying when I finally put it all together. And it's probably one of my longest chapters. And it's definitely the one that took the most research because I had to make sure I get everything right. Because, you know, with these real stories, people are going to want to know if you're making it up or not. So I had to make sure that everything was right and that I had backup for everything. Yeah, once I did and got to that conclusion, gosh, it's brutal.
Speaking of stories that everybody knows, the Bloody Mary story. And you have a chapter in the book about Bloody Mary.
Mm-hmm.
Is that you look in the mirror, you say Bloody Mary three times? Is it that Bloody Mary story? Because I have not read that one yet.
Yes, right. So yeah, Bloody Mary, Bloody Mary, Bloody Mary three right. times. And then she'll haunt you, yeah, whatever. She'll break out the... Go ahead.
That story seems like everyone's heard that. And it's been in movies. And I mean, you've encountered it somewhere in your life.
Absolutely.
And you dug into that.
Where did it come from?
Exactly.
You know, yeah. And we went all the way. I say we, because I also have a publishing company. And so when I publicly talk, I talk as we for the company. But no. So when I was researching all this, where did it come from? How did it actually happen? And we go back all the way to Bathory and all the way, all the way back to all this history, Mary Tudor, and find out where the Bloody Mary, the actual Bloody Mary, who is going to be haunting you if you were to say this three times in front of a mirror, where that came from. And then why is she trapped behind a mirror, or why does she get summoned when you say it? All the answers are in there. And it was a very, very interesting story.
Is it Mary Tudor? That's Henry VIII's daughter. Is correct. It Mary Tudor that they think is the Bloody Mary? Because she was known as Bloody Mary back in the day.
Yes. So there's questions of whether it's her or whether it is Mary Bathory. And then there's also Mary Worth, I believe was her name. She was in Chicago, Illinois, I believe. Yeah, in the 18th century, 19th century. But she also has a connection to this. So there's three Marys that it could have been.
If there's three different Marys, by saying it three times, are you really talking to each Mary?
Correct. And that's a great theory. The only reason I narrowed it down to one is because one of them had to do with... one of them used to walk up the stairs with a mirror, and she would be so obsessed with seeing herself in the mirror. And I almost want to say it was Mary Tudor, that it was kind of the proverbial nail in the coffin, because again, Mary Tudor kind of went crazy.
She definitely went crazy.
Yeah. With her, what is pseudocycesis or whatever it is when you think you're pregnant, therefore your body takes on the manifestations of pregnancy.
Mm-hmm. And she wanted to be pregnant.
Yes. Yes. So she actually went through this terrible mental breakdown twice of she thought she was pregnant. And so she started to show. And so her breast started to enlarge, and all these things started happening. And then the baby never came. And then all of a sudden she shrunk back down, and she it was really, really, and of course she went through hell for all that. But yeah, I believe we landed on her because of that.
Other thing about Mary Tudor, just because I've taken such a deep dive in Henry VIII and all of that.
Oh, good, yeah.
But she was Catholic, and then Henry, to divorce her mother, started his mm-hmm. own church, the Church of England. So Catholicism was basically banned. Now y'all got to be right. Protestants. And then right. when he died, Mary was next in line before Elizabeth. So Mary comes along. Mary's Catholic, and right. she's pissed. And yes. so then she, Bloody Mary, is because she really started killing off the Protestants. Like, she was brutal.
Right. She was brutal.
And
she
then on top of that, brutal. She's trying to provide an heir to the throne. And then she had the pregnancies that weren't pregnancies.
Right.
So I always kind of wondered if it was that Bloody Mary, but you just never know. But that's one that everyone's heard about. So I was wondering if you were able to say definitely, or it leans to Mary.
Yeah,
Tudor.
No, it definitely leans, but there are three of them, which, I like your theory. I might go back and do some more investigating on the saying it three times because there are three. I've never heard anything about that. I never, in all my research, I never came up with anything like that, but I like that. But that, of course, leads into another topic we're talking about, is urban legends.
Right.
So I like that. So next time I tell Bloody Mary, am I going to add that part of it to Bloody Mary? And then our other people who next time they talk about Bloody Mary, are they going to add to it? And then is that at some point going to become part of Bloody Mary's
lore? I don't know. It could.
Right. But that is how urban legends work.
And I will tell you this. I have never in my life done that. I just, when I was a kid, I lived in a haunted house. And that's when mm-hmm. you're most likely to do it at my age. Like, I'm really sure. going to do anything like that. But
right.
I was like, absolutely no way. And my friends would be like, you should try it. You should try it.
Yeah.
Why nope. should I try never. It?
And I won't do that. And I won't do a Ouija board. Yep. I don't care what you say you'll pay me. I don't care if you call me a baby or double dog dare me. Those two things are not happening.
I did the Ouija board when I was a kid.
Did you?
In the haunted house. I don't know why.
That's crazy.
Yeah. My sister says she would do it again. I'm like, well, you'll have to find somebody else.
So did you have any happenings that kind of bothered you or?
I don't feel like anything happened because of the Ouija board. I think it was already happening.
Yeah.
You know, and even if we did bring something in, you couldn't tell because there were so many other things happening in the house all the time.
I did do some research on the Ouija board, and there is a science behind it. It was pretty interesting. I didn't think I had enough for a story, so I didn't write on it, but it was pretty interesting. I can't remember the science that they use behind it, but it is all, you know, it's all placebo and it's all suggested. And so, it's pretty cool how they, you can kind of guarantee the certain result just by the power of suggestion.
Right.
So I really thought that was interesting.
But I do think there is a power of your mind that you're using with the Ouija board and you're inviting things in. And I think even if I'm just sitting in my own house going, I'm inviting these things in, like you're trying to do it. I just always think that's a bad idea.
Well, that's like, I did do light as a feather, stiff as a board one time as a teenager, and it worked, and we flipped out. Like, again, did it work because there was actually something there, or did it just work because there was seven of us around a, you know, a 90-pound teenage girl, you know, and we just happened to be able to lift her? Who knows? But it happened, and it freaked us out, you know, so I'll never do that again either.
Good idea. A story that I want to ask you about is also a story that goes around everywhere. And we mentioned this a little bit ago. The Lady in White.
Yes.
The town that I grew up in, there was a Lady in Blue. There's mm-hmm. a lot of haunted hotels where you hear about the Lady in White, a Lady in Red. And they seem to have a commonality to them where the lady is looking for a lover who never showed up. The lady is looking for a child who is drowned.
Right.
The lady is looking for something and she can't ever be at peace.
Right.
And that seems to be a really common story. I'm going to go so far as to say around the world.
Yes.
And
because I think that tragedy is a common story.
Correct.
You know, we've all experienced tragedy, and the catalyst of the woman in white is tragedy. And it's either usually one of two things. It's either being jilted, usually on the wedding day. So either a unfaithful spouse on the wedding day, or the loss of a spouse or loved one. And those are two things. So the more violent lady in white or haunted lady would be the one that was jilted. And the more mournful, woeful would be the one that experienced loss. Although those two could intertwine, and there's a few different kinds of lady in white, you know, with the woman scorned, and then the woman that experiences loss. But I called it, because I did a lot of research on this with the I don't know if you read it or not, it's something spectral. It's a mm-hmm. spectral remembrance, right? And that's what they are, is they're a remembrance. So they're not really a ghost, okay? So they don't really haunt. They're just stuck in there, kind of like the troop master of the troop. You know, he was kind of broken, and he was in this trance, and so he just went along with this program he had in his head. And that's what the Lady in White is she's stuck in this specific space and time that she experienced her tragedy or her loss or her unfaithful other, and she can't break out of that loop. And that's usually what the lady in white is.
I think it's interesting because you don't hear about the man in white. I mean, the man in black, that's Johnny Cash. We've all heard of him.
Right.
But it's always a woman.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. Well, and you know, because so we, again, I say we, I did do the research and found the original, the very first story. She lost her daughter. And it's really cool because she also had these two hounds. And we've heard of the Hounds of Hell. And that's also where the Hounds of Hell story comes from. Of course, there's your Greek mythology, and we go into all that too. And that's why, you know, urban legends build and build and build and build on each other. So, you know, it's so interesting how far you trace these back. And I go back into, gosh, I think we go back as far as like 20 BC or something like that in some of these stories, right? Because that's where it started. Mm-hmm. You know, and some of them we go into the Iliad and the Odyssey because that's where it started. Yeah, I can't remember where the original woman was from, but it was really cool because she also had two dogs, and the dogs stayed by her side as she went out and looked for her daughter, and she ended up dying because she wouldn't go back for sustenance or for rest. She just continued to look for her daughter. She ended up dying. The dog stayed with her. They ended up dying, and that's where you get the specter of the woman in white, and that's also where you get a certain story of the hellhounds.
And don't you think that story... It's not a stretch that it would happen in a lot of different places. Just the woman who went to meet her lover in the hotel and he didn't show up. Or the woman who died on her wedding night. You know, there's so many different stories. But I can see why stories like this one in particular you would hear in every city.
Absolutely. Yeah, and I think that goes back to, we've all experienced tragedy. And unfortunately, those kind of tragedies are... all too popular. They're all too well experienced. So I think, that everyone, and again, that could go back to folklore as well. Cause again, folklore is more of passing on a truth or passing on a morality or something like that, or a lesson. And so a lot of those could be lessons in, you know, making sure you pick the right guy, making sure this person doesn't do this with this person or things like that. So that's where a lot of folklore comes from. And then, of course, the urban legend aspect of it is when it just spreads like wildfire and changes cities and changes streets or bridges and things like that, because everyone has experienced that.
You just put an interesting thought into my head with that. So if the lady in white, lady in blue, whatever your lady is in your respective town or hotel or house, whatever. So maybe it started as a ghost story. Like it really did happen. The woman died. But then as time passes, they turn it into a morality story, which then becomes folklore. So what happened to this woman might kind of be one thing, but there's a lesson to you. Do not find love outside of marriage or whatever the morality lesson might be. So maybe sometimes they are a ghost story that get morphed into folklore.
Right. Yeah, I totally agree with that. So we do that even now, right? If we see a story on the news and it's just totally tragic, you'll take that story and maybe nerf it or change it a little bit and then explain it to your kids. This is why we don't do this.
I had an interview this week, the one about witches, and he said something that really stuck with me. History was written by the winners. And I'm like, oh, that's so true. And
yeah, it's true.
Because the revisionist part of that, that we, I think, experience surprisingly on a day-to-day basis in the current, our current environment, it just seems like people, you see one thing, but people tell you it's something else. And that's happened forever.
Yeah.
You know, go back to any point in history. Time, go back to the Romans, go back to anything. There was a time where one thing happened, but they wanted you to believe something else.
Right. So I think, yeah, absolutely.
What was one of your favorite stories in the book that you researched in? Either maybe it surprised you what you found out, maybe it was more interesting than you thought it was going to be, or just made a really great story.
Yeah, you know, a lot of them. I don't have a not favorite story, right? They're all very, very interesting. I loved Satanic Panic, chapter 3, which I did on... I'm a nerd. I don't know if you can tell by my voice. Do I have a nerd voice? If you see anything I do, you'll know I'm a nerd. But I like D&D. You know, I used to play D&D.
Dungeons and Dragons.
Dungeons and Dragons for the uninitiated. but growing up in a Christian home, my mother was terrified of D&D, right? Because the charismatic church that we went to, you know, right in the middle of satanic panic, they were handing out these pamphlets and, you know, these tracts and saying that, you know, if your kid plays D&D, you know, your kid is destined for hell and their soul's already lost. I mean, it was gnarly stuff. But it wasn't just the charismatic Christian community. It was everywhere in the 80s was this satanic panic.
Yes.
And it was all about Dungeons and Dragons. And I was like, why? Why would a tabletop game cause this much? Well, it's about one kid who ended up looking like he killed himself. So a private investigator went and did some investigating, found evidence of him playing Dungeons and Dragons, and he decided to make a name for himself by saying this kid killed himself by saying playing Dungeons and Dragons. And that's how it started. Well, I didn't like that story. So I dug into the private investigator. I dug into the kid. I dug into Dungeons and Dragons origination. And I found the true story. And the true story is, it's not happy. It's not a happy story. It's a very dirty story as far as the private investigator goes. And it's a tragic story as far as the kid goes. But it's very interesting how it all started. And this thing ravaged the world for a while. And it all started by one person making up a story about another person playing, you know, basically one person making up another story about another person. That's how Satanic Panic started. So I love that one. My favorite would have to be either El Duende, the Ozark Howler, or Hell's Gate Bridge. The Ozark Howler was so cool because it's here. A lot of it took place in Missouri, and I found a lot of Daniel Boone tie-ins to the Ozark Howler, and I even found an old scribbled note that he wrote from him to his sister-in-law that actually mentioned the Ozark Howler. And so it's really, really cool, very, very, very steeped in known history and also lore, and also Crowley. You know, Crowley was involved with the Ozark Howler, and Aleister Crowley. He's like the OG of the occult, right?
I've never heard of it like that, but yes.
Yeah, he is. And he was known as, I think the exact term is the wickedest man on earth. And so Aleister Crowley was tied into the Ozark Howler. And that happened right here in our, you know, in our backyard. So that one's a fun one. I think my favorite is probably El Duende. And the reason it is because I had a Mexican, a girl from Mexico, didn't even speak very good English, DM me and said, you know, hey, my bisabuela, so her great grandmother, had an experience with El Duende. And if you'd like to hear the story, you know, I'd love to tell it to you. Well, yes, please, please do. So her abuela actually told me the story. She typed it all out on email from her abuela's fingers. So this is from an old lady from Mexico telling me what her mother went through. And so El Duende is this small elf gnome type looking creature. And he kind of carries similarities, same as a Rumpelstiltskin, like he'll give you a deal, but he'll take his pound of flesh kind of thing. And that story is so haunting. Anyone who reads it, I've gotten lots of reviews. And I've gotten lots of people emailing me and DMing me saying I had to put El Duende down probably like 3 or 4 nights in a row. Couldn't do it.
Oh,
it is so frightening, this story. And it's even more frightening because it is from a firsthand experience. That has to be my favorite because it is just dark, and it's like this actually happened to this woman, and hearing it from the daughter of the woman it happened to, and you're talking, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4 generations back, and they still tell the story as a family because it affected the family that strongly.
Oh, I've got to read that one. One of my favorite chapters. I've not read that one yet.
Yeah, it's great.
I'm glad you gave me the warning, though, because now I'll read it during the day.
Read it during the day. Yeah.
I think that would be better than right before bed.
Yep. It's funny because I start the book off with a Wendigo. And Wendigo is one of my favorite stories. Just I think it, the whole story of Wendigo is very interesting. But my mom couldn't even get past that chapter. So she's read three pages of my book. So, and not all of them are dark. Some of them are dark, but none of them are made up. They're all factual and historical. And it's just that may be why it freaks some people out, is because it's kind of hard to think that some of these things happened. Yeah, that's got to be my favorite one, El Duende. It's good. Chapter 5.
It's a really interesting read, and you can read it like short stories, because that's basically what they are.
Yeah, each chapter is its own story. So each chapter goes over a different urban legend. Wendigo, Hicks Road, Satanic Panic, Lizard Man, Alaska Triangle, vampires. And I don't go into, your sparkly diamond vampires. No, we go back into the real lore of where everything came from. I think Elizabeth Bathory actually comes up in that one too, because she was very vampiric, taking baths in blood, things like that. So we do that. Leprechauns, the Dog Man. We go into the real Friday the 13th, Krampus, all of that stuff. All of it has an origin story of reality, and that's kind of where it goes.
So the big question is after doing that book and you came across a lot of stories, my guess is you had to whittle down what stories to put into this book.
Yes.
You kind of mentioned it. Will you be writing another one too?
Yes. I'm trying to work on that now. I'm super, super busy because in August, I formed a publishing company.
Congratulations. The Antonin Press
Publishing House. Yeah. So I'm now taking in authors and publishing them under my imprint. And that is taking a ton of time. But I do have my chapters set out. And this time I'm stretching out way further. I kind of stuck with, North America, Mexico, and a little bit of the UK in book one. In book two, I made it a point to go everywhere. So we're going Australia, Japan, China. Yeah, we're doing all across the globe, finding the most interesting and craziest urban legends and investigating them. And we're doing some fun classics, like chapter one of book two is Jack the Ripper.
Oh,
So we're doing that one. We're doing Sleepy Hollow, the Headless Horseman. Yeah, it's gonna be a blast.
This has been such an interesting conversation. I love diving into these stories with you. So I really appreciate your time, Micah.
Oh, well, thank you. Thank you so much for having me. It was an honor and quite fun just to see the invite and then to finally be able to sit down and talk with you. I've had a blast. So
it's been so fun. Pick up the book. I think you'd really enjoy it. So
yeah,
thank you.
Get it on Amazon or over at the Anatolian Press website, whatever. Yeah, it's good. It's funny. The only bad review I've gotten was from someone who didn't even read it. It's a 3-star review on Amazon, and it's a funny review. You should go read the review.
But here's the thing I learned a long time ago. Just never read the comments. Just never read the comments.
I mean, or at least have a good open mind about it. Because I did. I was just reading it. The person admitted they didn't read it.
I do not surprising. I just don't.
This idiot.
The book is Urban Legends, Ghost Stories, and Folklore. Micah Campbell, thank you so much. I've really enjoyed this. If you'd like access to all of our episodes, including the archive and advanced episodes, everything commercial free, become a Gravekeeper. Sign up on Apple Podcasts. You can try it for 3 days free. You can go to patreon.com/thegravetalks. Find everything there. Also, all ad free. For all of us here at The Grave Talks, I'm Carol Hughes. Thank you for listening.